Hello and welcome to the TAA teleconference, Faculty Success, Tenure, Promotion, and Merit Demystified, presented by Dr. Kathleen P. King. Kathleen is a popular international keynote speaker, professor of education at Fordham University's Graduate School of Education in New York City, and president of Transformation Education. She also serves clients as a certified professional life coach. Her major areas of research include distance learning, digital media, transformative learning, professional development, and instructional technology. She is an award-winning author of 17 books and over 130 published articles and research papers. Her books and web-based audio materials are used as course materials in universities worldwide and have a large following. She has led the development of many local and global innovative educational projects, reaching over 6.4 million learners through technology. Kathleen has a doctorate of education and master's of education in higher and adult education from Widener University, a master's in theology, and a bachelor's from Brown University. I now turn the teleconference over to Kathleen.
Welcome. It's very good to be with you folks. I hope you're all doing really well today. I know we have a good group of people online to be with us. This is a very different sort of format than a lot of us are used to. And I'll also tell you that it's a very different format in order to do a presentation. Imagine sitting in your office at home, you're looking at your bookshelf, and you're talking to it. It's a very unusual situation, but I'm very happy to be with you. And isn't it wonderful? We don't have to travel around the world, but we're able to engage together in this way. Thank you so much to TAA and to Kim Pollock for handling all the logistics, the marketing, getting this all together. TAA has been a wonderful association for me. I hope that you're enjoying it greatly. One of the great features are these teleconferences that we can benefit from. And so I'm really looking forward to doing this with you and sharing some of my expertise, because I really enjoy hearing from the other members of the association as well. We have so much rich talent in our group. I'd like to remind you that there are materials that we were using with this presentation. If you go to the email that Kim sent out, there's a link in it, and you can go to the TAA website, and there's about four or five different PDFs. If you haven't done that, you want to try to move to a computer and get those PDFs while we're on the air, as it were, because I'm going to be referring to those, and I want you to be able to look at them. That's why they were put up. First, you'll see that you have an outline when you look at those materials. You'll see that you have an outline of the major ideas we're going to be going over together. And this is the PDF that's labeled TAA 1 Activity. So you might want to pay attention to that as we go through the workshop, because it's going to help you keep track of where we are. You are also asked to read a little, very brief article called Surviving Tenure prior to the session. That was a PDF. And it's labeled TAA 2 Surviving Tenure. After the session, an outline or transcript of the session will be available for you. There are some other PDFs that I'll be referring to along the way that I'll ask you to take a look at. They're like different forms, different charts that we'll be using, and I'm providing them to you as illustrations and also models of what you could use, but also what you might modify for your own particular use. So those are going to be really helpful for you. Partway through, I'm going to stop and ask if you have any questions. And if you do, you'll unmute yourself and be able to ask questions. We'll spend a little time with that and then go back on and finish up the workshop and hopefully have time at the very end for some more questions. I really like to be interactive and read my audience, be able to discern how well they're connecting with what we're talking about, what they're really interested in. So you can see that's somewhat difficult with a teleconference over the phone. I don't have any visual connection with you. And because of background noise, we have to keep that mute on for all you folks. So you can't just jump in all over the place. So we're going to try this structure and see if that will allow us enough engagement that I can really chart and identify where your greatest needs are, and that's where we can focus. Because that's what I really like to do. I'm kind of a formative presenter. So this is where we're headed off. I hope this is very helpful, and that mute button is really important for all of us. As you likely read in the pre-session materials, I'm a tenured full professor at Fordham University in New York. And when people hear I've published 17 books, they think I must be about 85 years old. I hope my voice gives away that I'm not quite 85 yet. I'm quite a bit younger than that. But I came to writing late in my academic career, as it were, because I've had several careers. So I've been a very productive faculty member, very productive in research, publication, but I've been teaching a full load in the midst of this. And that's part of what I want to share with you folks, is how I navigated through that tenure system, and I have helped a lot of people around the world navigate through the tenure system as well. By using a strategy of really keeping in mind that triad, as it were, of research, theory, and practice, and looking also at the qualities that you need to be able to hit for the tenure, merit, promotion, etc., research, teaching, service. How do we combine those together in order to stay on course, make the decisions we need to do, and be effective, successful, rewarded in our own inner being, ourselves, and also achieve our goals? This is some of what I want to share with you. It's been a journey. It's a journey for all of us. We're all in different situations, different disciplines, different organizations, different particular situations, and I totally understand that. I want to explain a little bit more, too, about myself because I think it's helpful to understand my context. You might have heard when Kim read the background, I have a very interdisciplinary background. My undergraduate degree is actually biochemistry, and I have about 20 credits in engineering that I got much later in life. I also have a degree in theology. Let's talk about going in the total other direction, right? About 15 years later, after having children, I went back to school because I was teaching in higher ed, and I said, I want to understand this better. And that's when I did my second master's and my doctorate in education. I share that because I'm very interdisciplinary, which I think is a positive thing at this particular point in time and helpful. But I think everybody can be. And in addition, I have capitalized, kind of taken advantage of, leverage the fact that I had life experience. That's good news for every one of you, because all of you have your own particular life experience. And how do you bring that into who you are as a teacher, who you are as a committee member and a faculty member? Trying to have that authenticity so that your work isn't separated entirely from who you are as an individual being, but it's part of you and you can embrace it and be invested in it. You have your personal life, you have your work life, but they're not at odds with each other. Instead, they can blend and you can feel really comfortable and enjoy both parts of your life. It also gave me tremendous basis from which that life experience, and as we go on in our years, gives us tremendous spaces to be able to share with other people, draw into our writing, draw on that experience to say, here's some good research questions. And so I really want you to think about that and not discount yourself as an individual and not devalue, but instead validate the life experience that you have. This is part of who you are as a faculty member. And I don't think that message gets shared very much at all in the academy. Okay, let's head into the major content because that's kind of my warm-up area for you folks. One of the things that I had for you was a little activity. It's a single sheet, and it says, the primary goals I have for my faculty career at this time are blank. And I'd like you to just jot down somewhere what you would put there What are the primary goals for you in your faculty career at this time? Is it tenure? Is it publishing? Is it your first book? What is it? Mastering teaching. What is the issue that you're dealing with the most? Giving you a second there to think about it, jot it down. The next one is, what are the greatest difficulties that you're having in achieving those goals? So what is it that's stopping you? What is it that's getting in the way? What's causing the difficulty? Let's try to articulate that and identify it. And then finally, what I need now most to help me on my professional journey. See, this is why I was talking about the journey. What I need most right now in my professional journey is blank. In a perfect world, what would you be asking for? Okay? It's going to help you focus. We're going to be looking at considering goals. We're going to be breaking that down into 1, 2, 3, 4. We're going to be looking at creating your own deadlines. We're going to be looking at working back from deadlines and strategic choices. These are all very important aspects of being able to move ahead in our careers. So as we're looking at the role of the faculty member, we realize we have competing demands. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And we're going to talk a little bit about what do you expect when you're in the academy, and then, as the title of this session's talked about, strategies for success. And when I say that, I mean research agendas. How do we establish those and stay on track and keep generating new ones? Setting up publication goals, teaching excellence, service, and then continuing to grow as adult learners, faculty as adult learners in themselves. So, Survivor. I don't know. You know, when I talk about the TV show Survivor, it seems like a lot of people who are professors have not watched Survivor. We're not really reality people. We're not reality show people at all. But I have a partner that loves reality shows. To spend evenings together, I'm on the couch working on my computer, invariably grading or writing articles or whatever I'm doing, researching. And my partner is watching the reality shows. And so invariably I have to end up listening to this, figuring out what's going on and watching out of one corner, you know, of my eye and hearing it. Well, imagine this scene, right? The typical reality show. We're at the end of one of the shows. They've gone through all their escapades. They're in two different teams, and they've had to do these different feats and everything. They've been having clustering together, and they have alliances to see who they're going to vote off the island, who they're going to keep, because everybody's trying to get the $1 million at the end of the show. Whoever survives gets the $1 million. That's not like academia now. But there are a lot of other similarities. So they have to survive on the island with very little subsistence, figure their way through uncharted territory, get along with each other, figure out what are the mores, the values, what role they play. Sound familiar? And in the process, meet their personal goals in order to win the game. But at the end of each show, the end of each week, one team has to meet with the host of Survivor. They assemble in the room, and you hear the drums playing. Okay? The drums are playing in the background like jungle music usually. And with that, they enter the room. There's torches in the background standing up. And they enter the room. Now, in my picture of paralleling this to faculty, I'm thinking about tenure review or promotion review. And instead of just the survivor people coming in the room, instead you've got the faculty coming in, and let's use our imagination. They have on their caps and gowns, and they gather together, and what are they going to do? They're going to look at the materials. Somebody presents the candidate, and in our system in academia, they decide who stays on the island and who doesn't. And what are the qualities in academia that your colleagues make that decision based on. They include the external criteria, such as whether you've done your research well, whether you're on a good road for publishing, how well you're doing with your teaching, are you continuing to develop, are you making an effort, are you doing the syllabi the way you should, are you being innovative, what are your evals, are you serving the academic community, how well are you serving on committees. And they usually have faculty handbook guidelines for this. But then there are these other areas that surround the academic process, because there's that piece that's a little harder to get your hands around, in that you need to be a team player. You need to get along with others and fit in. And this is the part that for us as academics can be tricky, because a lot of us as academics are not so much people, but are more book people and research people. And so we might not have very finely tuned people and perception skills. But what we have to learn through the tenure and promotion and merit process is, it is an important part of the process to understand our organization, to understand its culture, and to understand the unspoken rules and behaviors of the people around us. And they are so different depending on if you're in the chemistry department and if you're in the philosophy department and if you're in the school of ed. Not because they might have a different set of rules written down, but because culturally those disciplines draw, in general, different types of people. And the disciplines have kind of evolved different cultures, personalities in themselves. And so that's usually, if you're in one of those departments, you have an affinity to that type of identity. So this is going to be okay. But you can't figure that what I do in a school of education is going to work perfectly for somebody in the chemistry department. So that's very important to keep in mind. Organizational culture, organizational climate is very important, and the unspoken rules of values and how to behave, the mores. And this is the part that you learn about getting along, being a team player, being supportive, and showing your value. I'm not going to talk a lot more about that part of it, because that's something that you have to work out in your individual place. But it is something that a lot of times in faculty development sessions, people do not talk about that and do not talk about that you have to scan that environment and make those discernments. Find somebody safe to talk to and be able to ask questions when you don't understand why decisions are made or certain behaviors. It might be odd to you. It might be different. And it's not unwise, it is wise, let's put it positively, it is wise to gather information. This is doing research. And if you pursue going for your tenure, promotion, and merit in that manner, you're going to be just as successful as you are in the other parts of your academic career. So now let's apply the same practical pursuit to some of the other areas that we are going to be pursuing for our faculty success.
Kathleen, I just want to break in quickly and just remind everyone to press 4-star. I'm hearing a little bit of background noise. If you press 4-star, it'll mute your line so that we're not hearing your background noise. And you can press 4-star again if you have a question to ask during the question and answer period. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kim. Now, one of the things is that what I see among faculty and what I started early on was that a lot of people are not very goal-oriented in their planning for tenure and promotion. Instead, they just think, well, if I do the right things, I'll get there. And any of us that have been in the academy for a while, or if you talk to people that have been in a while, you know that a lot of great people don't get tenure and don't get promoted. What is the difference? And I think that one of the things that can move you into the camp of those that do succeed in those areas is being goal-oriented. Identify, is tenure the high priority to you? Is that what you want to do, or do you not want to be on a tenure track? If tenure is what you want to accomplish in this situation, then you've got to identify the goals that are going to take you to that place. And you have to identify the needs to be able to help you get there. So it's the basic thing we do in program planning, strategic planning, identifying your goals, setting your needs. But the part that hangs us up all the time, it's making a plan and prioritizing all the things that bombard us all the time as faculty members. Now, everybody deals with this, correct? If they're in business, if they're a housewife, if they're a kid in school, everybody deals with competing demands in their life today. This is nature, 21st century. Because you're going to have committee demands. You're going to have demands saying if you publish, that's how you'll get tenure. If you serve and you're major useful to the division and the school, that's how you'll get tenure. If you get best evaluations, that's how you'll get it. You'll get all sorts of competing suggestions. You'll get all sorts of invitations to be on this grant, that grant, principal investigator of the other, write chapters for all these books. But what's going to get you tenure? An overload, extra classes, extra advisees, too many dissertations? What's going to do it? The prioritizing becomes key. Developing a simple little diagram that you can refer back to that is your own, that's made up from your own priorities. And you set them up and you say, these are my goals, these are my needs, and the ones that things and offers that come up that do not meet them, I can put them aside and leave them till another time. People will respect that if you explain it in the sense that you have a limited amount of time and you're trying to be the best steward of that. You're trying to be smart about these things in order to achieve the ultimate goal and be able to be there on a continuing basis to be able to work with them more. Overall strategies, perseverance, staying on track. Another is flexibility. Because while at the same time I'm saying have priorities and goals, sometimes opportunities arise. You weren't expecting them, but all of a sudden you've got a whole new line of research that's developed out of the blue. Somebody offers you data that you usually wouldn't have access to, that would be very hard to get access to. And you say, boy, this builds on my expertise. I was working on these other projects. Can one go on hold? This is a great opportunity. And I can play it into publication. I can play it into conferences. I can see how this would benefit the reputation of the university and thereby me. And you can see how it can meet several of your goals at the same time. At that point, revise the plan. It does not have to be written in stone because you are in control. So I'm saying have a priority list. But don't be so rigid to it that you lose these opportunities that might be better than the ones that you have. I always have to say that because I don't want to be misconstrued. Another one that I find makes a huge difference as far as principles is having a accountability. Whether this is a peer at your current institution or another, whether it's a faculty coach, whether it's your mentor from your studies, but accountability in staying on track, pursuing your goals, budgeting your time the way you need to, somebody that you have to answer to, and maybe you're both being accountable to each other, that's a really great design as well. A professional coach who understands your field can be invaluable in guiding you to resources, maybe to help with publishing and writing skills, maybe to beef up research methods if that's an area you need to use a research method you're not that familiar with. So a coach or a guide, a facilitator can work alongside of you to kind of provide that accountability and be able to point you in the directions if you need some additional training at different points. I've been at my university 13 years, and yet I continue to seek out opportunities to learn research methods I am not an expert in. And they're continuing to develop. Say we're using mixed methods in ways that we didn't use them 15 years ago. That field developed a great deal. I love learning new things, and I continue to build my expertise to move me ahead. Okay, I want to talk about building a research agenda, and then I want to take questions. I find building a research agenda is one of the most difficult areas for new faculty. And for experienced faculty, it might be they have a research agenda, but they've never thought of it as that. Instead, they've pursued a whole bunch of research projects, and they've not been interrelated. So both groups of people can be served well by thinking about and starting to develop a research agenda. A research agenda is simply laying out and identifying. And you can do this right in front on a piece of paper, right in front of yourself while I'm talking. If I came up to you and said, Mary, Luis, what are your major areas of research? What would you tell me? Now, for me, if you remember Kim's description, I have several areas. I'm a bit of an oddball. I like to have several streams of research at the same time because I find that is very productive, and I've done this since my early academic career. A lot of people disagree with it. They say, no, you have to focus, just be a specialist in one area. I have found it very productive to have several lines of research, two or three, kind of think of them as fishing poles. And I'm standing on the dock with my grandpa, and we've got our fishing lines hanging over the side. I'm like, Grandpa, I remember this scene as a little girl. Why do we have four fishing lines out there? There's only two of us. And he says, well, Kathleen, I knew it was my parents if they call me Kathleen, parents or grandparents. Kathleen, yeah, we can only hold one apiece, but there's a lot more fish under there. And when I see that bobber, the red and white little floaty thing, different regions call it a different thing. When I see that bobber starting to move, what do you think Grandpa's going to do? I said, you're going to go over and work the line. He said, exactly. If there's action on the line, then I work the line. And it's interesting. I didn't purposely start this procedure in my own life. But as I look back a few years ago and started helping other faculty, I realized I've basically been fishing all these years. I have these different strands or lines of research. Some of them are real ripe, and we are moving along quickly because I've got data, I've got opportunity, I've got funding, and we are busy. Others, you know, it's just not a time to get educational technology funding in certain areas right now. School budgets are tied up tight. Since we had certain different presidents, they eliminated a lot of ed tech funding. That's not a place you get a lot of funding. I got a lot in the late 90s and early 2000s in that area. But over in faculty development, there might be a lot of opportunities for grants. So one line I'm doing writing, ed tech. One line I'm seeking grants, faculty development. And another line I might be doing a lot of the actual in-the-field research, analysis, and synthesis work. And that's terrific for me because I get to have variety in my work. I get to have the variety of going out and doing research, keeping fresh, doing some grant writing, doing some proposal writing, doing article writing on the other projects. And different opportunities come up as you meet people. Grant proposals come up. Writing invitations come up. And having the expertise in a couple of areas over the years gives so many rich opportunities to be able to publish and participate than being just a specialist in one small corner. And it has enriched my academic work because I'm able to cross-pollinate those fields many times. and bring observations from one to another. But how do you manage it? If you look at that research chart and that publication chart listed that I had posted as PDFs, you'll find that one of the ways that you can manage it is writing down what are the publications, what are the projects you're working on, and what stage are they at. Keeping track of those and being able to see what progress they're going at. Then what I do is something bizarre. I start setting my own deadlines. Even when there aren't deadlines, I start setting deadlines. Now, nobody gives you generally, unless it's an invited article, nobody gives you a deadline for publishing a journal article. So a lot of my colleagues tell me it takes 6 months to write a journal article. And I look at them, and I'm like, does that include doing the analysis? They're like, no, that's with everything all done. That's writing the article. I said, well, how often during the week do you work on that article? They said, oh, well, I don't work every week on the same article. I'm like, well, what are you doing? Well, I know that that's the article I'm working on, and when I have time, I work on it. And that's why I think it takes them 6 months to a year to do one article, is because they are not putting it as a high priority, and they're not budgeting and dedicating time to that article and to that project. If you put that on the fast track for your work, if you put that on a schedule to say, even if you were just doing 2 or 3 hours a week on that article would move out probably in 3 or 4 months at the most. You would not be facing a 6 to 12 month timeline. So it's kind of like the old picture of the steady tortoise, you know? And if you keep it something on a steady basis, you're going to be able to pursue it and get to your goal much more diligently, much more quickly than somebody that's scattered, running around, and eventually we don't know when we get to it, and it always seems to get bumped by something more urgent. So using a schedule to chart what projects you're working on so you don't get overloaded, chart out, okay, I have to be really invested in research during this time, so I can't be doing a whole lot of research and analysis on all my projects at the same time. This has to get pushed to another time slot. So this is January, March. This is going to have to be in the summer. This is going to have to be next fall. And you kind of make a Gantt chart to lay it out. Budget your calendar for the year. Budget your calendar for the week by week in order as far as here's my appointment with myself to move, do my writing. Here's my appointment with myself to do my lit review or do my analysis. I seldom hear faculty put those in their schedules, the times that they're going to be working on their research. Let's go to questions. Hit 4-star. Is that right, Kim? 4-star to be able to ask questions.
Yes, it's 4-star, and it does take a beat, like 1 or 2 seconds, to actually unmute, so give it a beat or two.
Any questions about planning research, setting goals, understanding context?
I missed out at the beginning, and I'm not sure if you went over your research and submission tracking chart. Did you go over that?
We were just starting to talk about that a little bit, but we haven't gone over it entirely.
Okay, because I would like to know how you use that form and also your travel form if you didn't go over that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we'll go over those in detail.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This is Richard Hull. I have a question.
Go ahead, Richard.
I'm well past these issues, I guess, thankfully. But in listening to you, I was thinking back about the sort of politics of my experience going up for tenure. I was recommended by my department unanimously. The divisional committee passed it along unanimously to the dean, and the dean vetoed it and passed it on to the president of the university. I know how I dealt with it, and obviously it was a successful effort, but in general, how do you advise your mentees on this process with regard to working their way through this this process that has political dimensions to it? I'll do my star four and listen.
So, wait a minute.
All right.
So, in other words, in the particular case you had, how would somebody handle that?
Yeah, I had very strong support from the department,
yep.
Very strong support from the dean's divisional committee, which reviews each department's recommendations. But the dean vetoed it and then sent it on to the president with a negative recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then how would you handle something like that, right? That's the question?
That's the question.
Yeah.
How do you handle stumbles on this process of review that we go through when we're going through the tenure review process?
Very good question. And people will face that situation in all different forms. So you're sharing with us one particular scenario, but there's a lot of different ways that stumbles can be experienced. And you used one of the key words there, Richard, process. First thing you have to do is go back to your division chair and talk with them and investigate on your own. Look at the statutes. Look at the faculty handbook, if there is one, and find out what is the process that should have been followed. Make sure that it was. Now, hopefully you knew the process before you went through, so you're aware of it, you have all of that, et cetera. But you might not be aware of all the upper-level process that's going on from the committee to the dean and the dean to the vice president, et cetera. So you've got to review that, find out what the process is, and make sure that that was followed, because your solution is going to be in the process. Hopefully the easiest solution is if process was not followed. Then that's a very easy case for it to get re-reviewed. I usually would not go directly to a dean in your particular case. I would go to the chair, to talk with them about what they know with the situation, and then meet from there, determining a strategy as to how to handle it. If there's no chair support and you find out that that process was not followed, you might have to start to write and file a grievance and go through the grievance process of your university. That's not where you want to head, but if you can't get support within the unit, then that's what the grievance process is for. And I have seen it followed. People get tenure, and people stay at that school for years later, and there's no bad blood. I mean, it is process. That's why it's there as process, so that it's not personality. And so you go through the grievance process and ask for what happened to be reexamined by an outside group or an upper-level group, like administration, upper-level administration, combined with faculty group, reexamine what happened. And if additional materials are needed or claims are made, things have to be substantiated and providing documentation. That's what we've had to do in a couple of situations, and we've been very successful.
Hi, this is Denise. Hi, Richard and Kim. I came in a little late, about 10 minutes late, and I'm, I guess, not really asking a question as much as responding to Richard's question, and maybe can get Kathleen to just explore that a little bit more. I had a similar situation and was eventually successful, but in hindsight, in terms of junior faculty kind of being proactive in a setting where politics are pervasive, I wish that I had been more conscious of what the politics were at the upper levels of the university, was very connected to the department, went through unanimously, very connected to the dean, that went through unanimously, but the area where I was least knowledgeable in terms of the politics, not necessarily the written expectations. So you know how many articles you have to published, you know how many, how much service you're supposed to complete, you know how much outreach you're supposed to participate in, but really what the university level committee, as it was structured at the time I went through, who they were, what they looked like in terms of their research backgrounds, understanding the provost's politics as it related to what he perceived was or would be a sound senior faculty member who would contribute to the university. I didn't have that kind of information. Mm-hmm. And after it didn't make it through at the university level, I went back and got that kind of information to make sure that their interests and their politics and their concerns could be easily addressed in my updated vita dossier rather, and my letter mm-hmm. of response. So is there something else in terms of proactive actions people can take to prepare for the kinds of politics that do exist that really might not have anything to do with, you know, whether you've met the number of articles or grants or whatever the kind of black and white expectations are? And I'll mute myself and listen.
Well, I hope you'll go back and listen to the first 10 minutes of this session, because I talked at length about organizational climate and understanding that, and understanding the unwritten and sometimes unspoken expectations and evaluations, expectations, mores, values of the division, the culture, the climate, the college, the university that we work in. So we talked about that at the very beginning. I'm sorry you might have missed that part. But what you're saying is very important as well, and I really appreciate it, because what you're saying is to take that information and not just be mindful of it. We've got to systematically make sure we're addressing the interests of every unit within our organization in our materials, in our proposal letter, the letter of application, and in the way that our materials are presented. So the divisions that you use, the breakdowns, the language, referring to the mission of not just your unit and your college, but of the entire institution is very important. Looking at what do the leaders of the institution, the president, but also your academic vice president or provost, wherever that lays in your institution, the academic house, what are their missions value? What do they look for in a senior faculty? What are their expectations beyond this standard publication, teaching, and service? What is it that's distinctive about your school and the distinctive about the leadership that's there at that time? And what you're calling us to do is very, very good, and I have seen the need for this in other cases as well, and it's kind of something I've internalized and automatically do. But it needs to be articulated and formalized for people. Yes, you're right, that you need to proactively include and address those issues, discover them and address them in every step. How you discover them is not an easy sort of thing. It's not a flat cut and dry, pick up the annual report and all the answers are there. You've got to watch people. You've got to listen. You've got to look at university publications. You've got to watch the web, what they put out, what the presentations are by the leadership that you're going to be going up to, and get to know them, even though you don't know them maybe face-to-face. Get to know what they are about, what makes them tick, what their agenda is. And I hate to talk that way, but this is what we're talking about, what their agenda is, as well as you know your dean, your chair, and your department head. Very good point. Thank you for bringing that up. These are very, very good points that you folks are sharing with us.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. My question, you were talking about the tenure process. Is so, and I've not gone up for tenure. I'm a junior faculty member. So you're saying that you actually get a chance to add additional information to your tenure packet after it's been reviewed?
That's only if you file a grievance or are given another opportunity somehow.
Okay.
No, do not count on that.
Okay.
No. What you want to do, now you bring up another good point. There's so much on this. What you really want to do, I have any number of junior faculty at my school and other schools, we put together their materials together. They talk to me and they say, Kathy, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And I give them suggestions how to organize their material. And I say, if you want me to look at it, I'll look at it with you. If you want to send it to me, I'll go through it. Show me the letter you're thinking about writing. And they send me the letter. I give them suggestions. And then I tell them, take it to your department chair and ask them to look at it. Take it to your division chair and ask them to give your suggestions or another senior faculty. They will love being asked to assist a junior faculty to go up through the ranks. They would welcome the opportunity to support you in that. Do not feel you have to do this on your own. Use the wisdom that's around you that knows the agenda and the people, the players. I hope that helps some because sometimes people don't seem to be aware that they can ask people to look at their materials, that you really should get somebody from your institution or elsewhere to help you with this process and definitely somebody in your institution also to look at that letter that you're putting up. That has to be done before. You might not get a chance to do that again later. We'll take one more question, and then we'll go back to our workshop. But these are very good questions. I really appreciate this.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I just had a question about, you know, the research schedule that you had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just this, are you, I mean, there's probably no set rule for this, but so you were saying that some people may need to bump projects back. Do you generally recommend working on just one project at a time, or are you reacting to things as you're happening, you know, as they're happening around you?
Very good. That's a good question. What I try to do, I have a couple of different research charts that I use, okay? I am a chart person. I am visual, a chart, and my mind is so active, I have to make these charts to keep me on track. I think a lot of us are like this. That's why we're drawn to this field. We're idea people. So what I do with the charts is I lay out the projects I'm working on. No, I do not only work on one. I am writing three books right now, and I'm writing three chapters for other books, okay? And I'm doing two articles, and I'm working on two research projects. Okay, I'm a little hyper. I am not the typical, perhaps. But I am juggling all of those, and I take time, but what I'm not writing actively every one of those books right now. One book is right now, people, it's an edited volume. People are writing the chapters, and as they come in on Fridays, I dedicate 2 hours to editing chapters that come in from the authors. Comes in on Tuesday, that's fine. It goes in the folder to be reviewed on Friday. That's when I'm working on that book. As far as another book, I'm actually writing the chapters day by day. I'm taking an hour each day to work on that book right now, Digital Media in Higher Education. I'll plug the book, okay? And so I'm working on that right now actively. See, it's in a different stage. So you can have multiple projects going in different stages. Another book is in production. Another book, I'm waiting for the contract to come through. Another book is in the stage that we've done the first round of edits and we're waiting for the second to come back from the authors. I think there's actually four books right now. So they're at all different stages, but I've got a chart, and this is the big thing the charts do for me, is that the chart catalogs that material. So I know what are the timelines for everything, what's the name, it can move right into my Vita when I'm done with the project, what is the name, who's involved, what did we do last, going across the columns, right? What did we do last, what's the next deadline? And then when it goes in for submission, it moves to the next level on the page. And then when it's going to press and it's getting ready to be published, it's in the last category on the page. That's how I use that publication timeline. There's one there, research timeline and publication timeline. I'm actually cataloging them because I find a lot of people don't know when they submitted their things for publication. How, when people are responding to their research inquiries, when did I last contact University of Virginia for the data that I needed for that analysis I was doing? I can't remember when. And so then you spend half an hour going through your email, going through your files, trying to figure out the last time you contacted them, instead of keeping it readily accessible so that you know I contacted in November, I'm going to follow up in January. So if you stay organized, this is kind of project management. Take a look at a simple book on project management, and that's what we're talking about, is having multiple projects going, but knowing where they are at all times and having it in a single sheet. Design it yourself for what you're comfortable with. The single sheet that it becomes like a dashboard, a snapshot of what you're doing, you can refer to it, and then drill down to more detail. But that gives you a catalog so you always know what's in progress, and it's not bouncing around in your head, getting lost, opportunities lost. Sometimes, as you said, just following opportunities as they come up. Sometimes spectacular, unusual opportunities arise. Sometimes. And in those cases, you might be able to move something else that you're working on that the data is standard, already available, collected, already here, and just waiting, not urgent. You might be able to delay that for a couple of months while you take care of this unique opportunity that came in. If you use a chart like this, you know you're moving this into priority, but that you're going to come back to the one that you just put behind a little bit. It's not going to get lost. You're going to pick it up again because you don't want to lose all that work. You're just bumping it to another priority in the list. Most faculty, in my experience, have not had any sort of background in project management, thinking about scheduling their time like this, so they don't use some sort of tool. And I created most of these just in Excel. Some sort of tool that visualizes for you, works as a tracking aid to be able to help you keep track of your work, where you're going next, so that you can make an informed decision, so you can follow up and stay on track. And I hope that helps. If not, yeah. Ask another question. Do you have a follow-up?
Well, I have a question that's not necessarily a follow-up, but it's sort of, maybe it's related.
Okay.
And I think, I mean, I know you were talking about you work with others, but collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what advice do you have? Like, you know, this is a project management, and then how do you?
I think I know where the question's coming from, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a big one, and I know you have more to cover, so.
But it's a very good, I'm glad you brought that up, okay? I've been dealing with this with a couple of people lately. For themselves, they're working through. I've kind of become adept with it myself as far as collaborating with people. First, before you get into something, make sure who you're collaborating with. Make sure they're accountable and responsive and that the project you're working on is the same priority it is to you, okay? Then the next thing is once you're in the project and you're feeling like, I never want to work with this person again because they never keep up, okay, you've got to set realistic expectations for that project. So if you know you're going to have your chapter of the book done in 3 weeks, but you know Susie is going to take her usual 4 months, you've got to schedule it that way and know you're going to work on other things during that time. If she can't meet the ultimate deadline, now you've got an issue. That's a different set of questions. But your project management, you allow for the pace that your other person's working at. You work with them to see if you can get a meeting of the minds to come to what's an agreeable schedule that they will keep. You have to know their habits. I know some of my colleagues, I love them dearly, but they'll tell me May 1st, and I know. I put it in my calendar as July 1st because I know their habits.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, they are earnest that it'll be there May 1st, but I know from working with them for so many years, it'll be July 1st. So I work that into my realistic calendar on my side and not drive myself crazy expecting otherwise. If that's not going to meet the deadlines, then you have an issue, and you're either looking at taking a greater load of the project or finding a new collaborator.
Right. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So let's go back, and, you know, we'll have I don't know if we'll have time on this call for more questions. I don't think so. But we will have time. You can email me questions. We can have follow-up conversations, et cetera. My email, my contact information is available in these materials, and I'm very available to you. I'm part of your association, and I am one of your colleagues. So I'd be very happy to talk to you. I am finding this a very rewarding session with you folks. I really appreciate your questions. I think this is a very tremendous opportunity that we've had to have these conversations that we so seldom have in the Academy. We so seldom have these conversations, very frank ones, about what we have to deal with. One of the things, I'm going to go through the charts in a minute, but I do not want to miss thinking about teaching excellence. I want to talk about that for a minute because I know a lot of people on the call aren't necessarily from schools of education like myself. And I happen to be an instructional design sort of person, and I'm actually a specialist in how adults learn. That's why I love working with faculty, and I really love understanding the needs of faculty members. But coming from a school of education, we kind of have an advantage of understanding how to design and think about creating classes, doing instructional design, doing assessment. It's kind of hardwired into our blood, as it were. And people that are in other disciplines don't necessarily have a background in assessment, pedagogy, instructional design. So I want to share a couple of things that if you're thinking about your promotion and tenure and you're looking at your teaching evaluations are troublesome, I want you to think about a few things. One is, how do you personally evaluate your teaching excellence? What processes do you have in place to get feedback from the students on your own? Let's think about possibly using formative feedback, formative assessment during your classes so that by the time you get to the final evaluation, you're up a few notches. So if you're really having trouble and you're looking at a full semester, after 1 month, you might just simply hand out a slip of paper and say, you know, class students, do you have any concerns, any complaints about this class, things you're having trouble with that I need to improve? Anything, the way that I can improve the course to help you? I mean, other than eliminate all the tests. I mean, they're going to want us, you know, you make a joke of that and say, of course, not that, but, you know, are there any ways I can improve? Do you need more handouts? Do you need more tutorial? What can I do to improve? Talk more slowly. What can I do? Give them a chance to complain and gripe. But you know what else you're doing? You're letting them be heard. And you honestly look at those sheets of paper and say, what can I do to address these? And don't take it on the chin and be angry and feel like they're attacking you. say, what wonderful students, they're going to help me do better. Take that information, try to put some of it in action. Let them know. Say, okay, I saw your notes to me, and of course they're anonymous, all right, because you don't want them to feel any retaliation, any power issues. Very simple concept. You know what you're going to do. You're going to identify one or two, address them, and in a month you're going to say, will you folks please fill out another form for me and tell me how am I doing on these two issues I've been trying to work on? What else would you recommend for me on these? Is it helping? Is it working? What do I need to do? And you know what? You're keeping all these pieces of paper. Then you're going to do it again to get more feedback from them. And then at the end of semester, they're going to do their official semester evaluation. And they would have gotten a lot of angst out of their system already. And one of their comments is going to probably be, this teacher cares about our feedback. This teacher is responding to our needs. And no matter how much difficulty you're having in the class, that's going to ring high in any college or university that is trying to retain students and keep students in their schools in a competitive age. Because those are the type of teachers that are going to continue to improve. That's a simple step of doing formative evaluation in your classes and getting those students in front of you to anonymously share with you how you can better improve. Keep that, and then in your dossier, your promotion and merit materials, write a little section, put it in the teaching section, and say, I know colleagues have talked about my evaluations, have not been as stellar as they could be. I have taken this to heart. I have been working on it. I have specifically gathered formative feedback from my students in this course and that course. Based on that, I have instituted, I am doing X and Y with those students in those classes, and I have had very positive responses about how those activities have improved my courses. I'm including some of those positive responses in my evaluation folder. Okay? Now, you're identifying that they're materials you collected anonymously on your own, and you're explaining what they are, but you're demonstrating that you're a teacher that's a reflective practitioner looking to improve practice and trying to address the needs of students. Of course, you're also going to seek out, if you have a teaching and learning center in your university, a faculty support center that can provide some support in instructional strategies and assessment. But that's something that you can do very privately between you and your students and get feedback to improve your practice. And I'll tell you that that goes light years with committees when they see faculty doing that, opening themselves up, letting students give feedback, and then not just that, instituting it and saying, I am continuing to move forward and improve. That is a faculty member dedicated to teaching and instruction, and then now your record of research, your service to the university, stand together strong with it. Let's just look at the research document, research and submission. As I described during the questions, you've got here three or four areas going down. They're shaded. This is a landscape document. You've got currently projects you're working on. What's the research method you're using? So this is getting you to articulate it. Is it qualitative, quantitative, et cetera? Where is your data source? What are you going to use for analysis? Now, it might be what I'm doing here is I'm kind of walking through a basic research project. It might be all you know is, I want to research X, Y, and Z. I haven't figured these things out, Kathy. What are you talking about? Well, that's fine. That's showing you where you are in the development of your project. Okay? And then what you're doing going across the page is you're identifying what's going on through different aspects of the project development moving into publication. So the top part is currently being researched. Once the research is done, if I had something in line, then I was in line one, I'd move it down to line one or whatever was available when I started writing, and then when I submitted, it would go down to the next group. And when it was accepted and ready to go to press, it would go into the final group on the page and go into your CV. The travel document, because somebody asked about that, I do a lot of speaking, also go and present at conferences. This is a one-pager that helps me keep track of those, again, my little dashboard, so that I know that I have already two engagements in October, and I'm teaching classes. I'm probably full. I already have two engagements in November, one in December. Oh, I only have one in January. I probably have one slot open if it's not when I have classes. And so I can see at a glance if I have opportunity available, I don't overlap responsibilities, and I also know if I have to provide anything, like am I doing a book table, do I have my registration done, have I already made my air flights, what hotel am I staying at? It becomes a checklist so I can easily know where I am on all of my travel arrangements, rather than kind of starting from nothing on each event that I'm going to and saying, oh, I forgot to book a room. I've had colleagues that happened to. They went to a conference. They had no room. They forgot to book a room for the conference because they're doing so many things at once. So that's a handy way to keep track of all your arrangements and have the information ready, but also know that you've taken care of arrangements for all of your activities. I think we're just about out of time. Kim, we're at 2:08. Yes, we are.
Yes, I'm here. We are a little bit over, but we can certainly continue if you want to finish out what you wanted to share today.
Okay.
That's fine, as long as everyone still wants to stay online. If you can't stay on, the teleconference is recorded, so you can always go back and listen to whatever you might miss.
Thank you, Kim. I just want to say one more thing, and then I'd like to take any final questions in case anybody's been holding a question that they really want answered. I'd be glad to do that with you. Service is a strategic choice. Your universities, and I'm sure senior faculty on this call are nodding their heads, okay, when I say this. Colleges, universities are urgent for people that will serve, and they have so many terrific opportunities for us to do good work in them and great projects. But while you're on the tenure track and you're in pursuit of tenure and promotion, you've got to make some strategic choices. If you're going to invest yourself in a project for service, see if you can choose a project that not only meets your personal validation, that you can feel good about, because I put value in that, but also is something that is perceived as addressing an important organizational need and is perceived as something that is of value to the university. So if they do not particularly value community service in religious organizations, if that's not going to have any play in your dossier, and you have an option between that specifically, aside from your own religious observance I'm talking about, between that specifically and being able to do community service in a community-based organization that's not religious-based, that might be a better call. If you have the opportunity to serve on the tenure and promotion committee, even junior faculty serve on that in some universities, and also the option to serve on, let's say, the alumni committee, tenure and promotion would probably be a more valued position, depending on the university. That's the sort of thing that you have to know about your university and understand what's valued and see, especially now if you're a professor of student services, I could see being part of that alumni committee as directly related to your field and be a very good connection for you to gather research. So that might serve very well. See, so I can't say these flat and dried. I'm kind of doing broad strokes here. You can't take these literally. They depend on the individual, your discipline, and your organization you're in. Looking at ourselves as lifelong learners is the most powerful perspective that we can share with each other. This is a journey we're on, and it's something that we're going to be doing not just at this university we're at, but for many years forward, I hope, for each of you. And it's something that I hope you'll continue to grow wherever you're planted, and you'll continue to lift up other people to help them grow as well. It's a lot of insight and reflection, and I wish you all the very much success. Any more questions?
All right, remember to press 4-star to unmute yourself if you want to ask a question.
Thank you.
Okay, so did anyone have a question?
No question, but just a comment. I enjoyed this presentation very much, and as well, the handouts are very useful and will be shared by our faculty development area with the rest of the faculty.
Thank you very much. We're glad that that's been useful for you.
All right, anyone else? All right, well, I'm going to thank you, Kathleen, for sharing your expertise with us, and thank you all for participating in today's teleconference.